Welcome to the Data Stack Show. Each week, we explore the world of data by talking to the people shaping its future. You'll learn about new data technology and trends and how data teams and processes are run at top companies. The Data Stack Show is brought to you by Rudderstack, the CDP for developers. You can learn more at rudderstack.com. Welcome back to the Data Stack Show. Kostas, we always talk about getting guests back on the show. And we haven't actually done a great job of that, but it's kind of hard with all the scheduling stuff. But we were able to do it. Vinod, who was one of the creators of Apache Hudi, is coming back on the show. And I am really excited because last time we talked to him, his project was in stealth mode. So I remember before the show, he said, we can't talk about, you know, what I'm working on. But it is now public. It's called One House. And it's super interesting. It's a data lakehouse built on Hudi, of course, which isn't a huge surprise. So I'm super excited to learn just more about One House and the way they tackle the problem. But one thing I want to do, we got a really good explanation from Vinod last time about the difference between a data warehouse and a data lake. I mean, maybe one of the best explanations we've heard, but One House is squarely in the data lakehouse space. And so I want to leverage his ability to articulate these sort of, you know, deep technical concepts really well to ask about what the data lakehouse is and just get a definition. So that is what I'm going to do. How about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have a hard time, like, to be honest. We know this, like, one of these guys that's, like, always awesome to chat with him on a deeply technical level. But I'm also, like, very interesting to hear more about the product they are building, the business they are building, and his whole experience of going from managing, like, an Apache open source projects to trying to build a business on top of that. And lakehouses are also like a very interesting new, let's say, like, product category out there. And I'd love to hear more about that and how he sees the future. So we'll see. I'm pretty sure we are going to have like a lot to chat about with him.
There's no question. All right, let's dive in. Back to the show. This is your second time joining us on the Data Stack Show, and it's so good to have you back.
Yeah, it's fantastic to be back. And you know, I look forward to another. Last time around, I think it was a very deep, interesting technical conversation. So I look forward to another, you know, round of interesting data conversations here.
Absolutely. Well, for those of our listeners who missed the first episode, we have to ask you to do your intro again. So can you just give your brief background? And then I'd love for you to finish by, last time you couldn't talk about this publicly, but what you're doing today at One House.
Yeah, my name is Vinod, and I've been working on open data infrastructure in this area in our own databases, data lakes, for the last 10 years and change. And I started my career at Oracle with the Oracle Server data replication that led the key value store in LinkedIn during the time when, you know, key value stores were the cool thing that you build. Then I moved on to Uber, which is where, you know, Apache Hudi happened. And we kind of, like, you know, brought transactions on top of our Hadoop data lake back in the day. And what we call transactional data lakes, I think it's a pretty nerdy engineering name, which is very, you know, kind of what is known as the lakehouse kind of architecture today. I continue to kind of, you know, grow the project in ESF Apache Foundation. I still work the PMC chair still for Apache Hudi. And right, you know, after Uber, I actually had spent a good amount of time at Confluent as well. I wasn't working on Hudi, I was working on Kafka. I was working on, you know, KSQL DB, if you heard about that, a streaming database. And Connect, a bunch of like other things. I'm most recently, I think now I'm super excited to talk about One House, which is where my current employment lies. I'm CEO founder at One House, and with you know, our goals is to manage, you know, data lakes or lake houses into existence. We see a world where there are fully managed closed systems, and then there is DIY open systems in the world. And we're trying to actually build sort of like that kind of managed experience on top of open technologies like Apache.
Love it. Okay, let's, I'd love to kind of set the stage and focus on a term that you mentioned, which is Lakehouse. And some of our listeners will be familiar with that. Some of them, you know, will have seen it in some sort of marketing materials, I'm sure, out there. So I want to ask you for a definition of data lakehouse. But before we go there, could you remind us what the original use case for Hootie was specifically for transactions on data lake? So like, what were you facing in that role inside of the company? And then like, why did you need transactions on data lake?
Got it. So yeah, so for this, I think we need to go back to actually 2015, 2016, and Uber was growing very fast. We were building out our data platform, and all we had was an on-prem data warehouse at that time. And while, you know, essentially we were, you know, hiring fast, we were building a lot of new products, we were collecting, you know, high-scale data, right? So we couldn't fit all this data into our on-prem warehouse. You know, it's not built for this amount of storage. A Hadoop cluster is like an HDFS cluster, even before Uber, right? You know, at LinkedIn or Twitter or in many places, Facebook, it's been, you know, it's been scaled to several hundreds of petabytes at least, right? So we built out our Hadoop cluster, our data lake. And here is where I think we had a very interesting problem that, you know, remember, like my previous stint was at LinkedIn. This was something that we didn't even face at LinkedIn, which is Uber is a very real-time business. So if it rains, the prices change, you know, and then there is a huge operational aspect to the company. There are 4,000 engineers and let's say like, you know, 12,000 people who are operating cities, right? And they all need access to like fresh, near real-time data about what's going to, you know, what's going on out there, right? So essentially what we found was while we can stand up a Hadoop cluster and dump a bunch of files onto that, you know, on there and, you know, bring Spark or something and write some queries, we were not able to, like, you know, for some of our core data sets at Uber, like the trips, transactions, and these core database tables, we were not able to actually replicate them very easily onto the data lake. We would suffer, you know, multi-hour delays, you know, 8 hours, 12-hour delays in first ingesting it and then writing ETLs on top of it. So it got to a pretty serious level where, you know, people actually figured out we couldn't run our fraud checks fast enough. So we were actually losing money from fraud. It was like a pretty serious business problem actually. And we actually started to look at, hey, how do we solve this? And, you know, and we essentially actually looked at what we had before that. How were we solving it before Hadoop cluster? We were, you know, like the on-prem warehouse that we had supported transactions updates, and it can actually do kind of like, you know, you can write like merge style ETLs on top that people currently write using DBT on all of these warehouses, right? So essentially we were like, that's pretty much it. Like we need to essentially build that sort of functionality, bring it to the lake, but do it in a way that we retain the scalability, all the cost efficiency, all the different advantages of the lake. And that is how Hootie was born. So we essentially called it a transactional data lake because, you know, in our mind, what we are doing was, you know, introducing basic transactions, building, you know, some indexing schemes, updates, deletes. You can now, you know, your data lake is now mutable, which means it can absorb, you can get a change record from upstream. You can update the table instead of rewriting the whole thing, right? And that's kind of like how Hootie was born. And it was pretty like yearly, like it came before most of the other contemporary technologies that you see out there.
Love it. Such a great story. I remember you talking about that in the previous episode, and just so wonderful to hear the Genesis story again. So you've kind of already answered a lot of those questions, you know, from a historical lens, but define the data lakehouse, especially sort of through the lens of how you view the world at OneHouse.
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually one of the key, you know, technology wise, like what a lakehouse adds to a data lake is, as I mentioned, transactions updates, right? It gives you more like, you know, upgradeability. So it gives you like impedance match with how you do things on the warehouse, if you think about it that way.
Like from a user standpoint.
There is also, from a user standpoint, there are two other important aspects though. these are mostly used to kind of, you know, improve the baseline performance of the data lake compared to a warehouse. For one is the metadata management. So most warehouses, even cloud warehouses, if you see today, they actually have pretty good, you know, fully managed metadata systems where if you want to execute a query, you know, statistics for different files, columns, yada, yada, all of these things are sort of, you know, like well-maintained and they're organized in a way that queries can be planned very quickly, right? So that is another angle that that piece of technology that the Lakos adds, because lakes were pretty much, you know, files and the individual query engines were, you know, high metastore is basically what we had for metadata management, right? And if you look at what high metastore never tracked any file level statistics or anything.
Right.
So really file level granular statistics and all of these things, that's one big area, right? The second, which is where I think in Hoodie, we spent like a lot of time on, around it and we are like much further advanced, there is what we call table services. So if you look at any warehouse, take Snowflake or BigQuery, like you'll find a fully managed clustering service. You'll find like all these like different services that do useful things to your table. And they are all like, you know, self-managing. You don't have, you don't write code, right? For all of these things. But if you look at sort of like, even with the you know, that is why I feel the table format doesn't do justice to sort of like what we need to build overall. The table format alone is not important. You need like a set of services that rival warehouses that can provide you clustering, you know, data loading, ingestion, all these other things. This is where what we focused a lot on Hoodie. And this is, I would say, all these three put together, you know, like the storage format, like the table format itself, you know, accepting updates, deletes, and like transactionality, plus like a well-optimized metadata layer, plus these kind of like well-managed table services, they give you together, I imagine, like, you know, if you take a warehouse and break it sort of like horizontally, you get a bottom half of a warehouse today, where, and then you can fit like a, you know, query engine like Spark or Kino or Presto or anything really on top, right? So that in my mind is what a Lakos should be, right? And in that sense, yeah, that you know, connecting back to one house, this is sort of like what we want to unlock, is for people to be able to get this bottom half as a service while they have the choice to pick any query engines, pick and choose.
Love that. Okay, one more question from me, Kostas, just to help me and our listeners set the stage. So, you know, from a marketing standpoint, Databricks has invested a lot in the Lakehouse term, you know, which is maybe one of the ways that a lot of our listeners, including me, are just, you know, are familiar with the term or have become familiar with the term. How do you think about one house in relation to, you know, to sort of Databricks flavor of Lakehouse? Are they similar in terms of like, I love the illustration of the bottom half of the warehouse, but help us understand the differences and similarities.
Yeah. Okay. It's a great question. So I think Databricks' articulation, Lakos is slightly different, right? I think if you're going from the paper even, essentially, it's a Spark Lakos, essentially, or a Spark Databricks Lakos, right? And even if you look at Delta Lake, there is an open source version of Delta Lake, and then there's a paid version of Delta Lake. So they essentially have two flavors of the bottom layer, if you will, that I just mentioned. While they have a top layer, which is a, you know, super optimized Spark layer, and you know, Photon and like all of the investments that they put into that, honestly, they can apply to other formats as well, right? It's end of the day. See, like all these table format games, they're all querying Parquet files at the end of the day. So sure, if you can optimize, I think it's a decoupled problem. And the way they market it is as a full vertical stack against Snowflake. Right, that's kind of like at least where I've seen most of their marketing energy being spent so far. And that's probably because Snowflake is one vertical stack, correct?
Yep.
So, but if you look at the pieces overall, it's still kind of like aligns. The biggest problem, and we see this with the lot of, you know, Hoodie and Delta have been like around for much longer, supporting mutable workloads and, you know, everything, right, for like three years now, right, and out in production. So we routinely run into this, right? People want either, you know, people like Hoodie for how rich of a table service ecosystem it has, how actually vibrant and grassroots open source the community is, or several key technical differentiators like, you know, in concurrency control or like indexing and whatnot, but they still want like Databricks, just, you know, like, you know, Databricks Spark, right? So yep. I think as Hoodie, we didn't have to care as much about that, but as OneHouse, we deeply care about that because somebody who wants to buy both OneHouse and Databricks should be able to get like a really good end-to-end experience. So even for us, some of the thinking is now very, you know, customer focused that way, I would say. So there is a slight difference. We don't believe in one vertical stack, you know, end-to-end. I think this can be accomplished by breaking the bottom half separately and then fitting every query engines. So let me just give you some data, right? You take like Ray, Flink, and then, you know, Dask or like any other upcoming query engine. For what it's worth, you know, between them, they have some 50,000, 60,000 GitHub stars, right? So it's a multi-engine is like a new thing. There are things like Bodo, like there's going to be new query engine innovation that's going to happen. So I think decoupling the data layer from the compute layer at the vendor or even at the SaaS level is the good thing overall, we feel.
Yeah, super interesting. Yeah, it's almost like bring your own interface to the bottom layer or multiple interfaces, which is super interesting. Okay, Kostas, I could keep going, but please, I'm actually more interested in what you're going to ask than what I've already asked.
Yeah.
Oh, well, come on. That's not true. I think you are like asking all the interesting questions. I'm boring. I'm just asking like a little bit more technical stuff. That's all. But yeah, okay. I have like something that I really want to ask you, Vinod, because you mentioned something. You said that there is a number of services that like a lakehouse need to have, like in order to rival warehouses.
Yeah.
And I really like the word rival, first of all.
Yeah.
But can you tell us like, you mentioned them, but like, let's enumerate like these services again. So like our audience, like has like much more clear idea of like what we are talking about in terms of like technical services there.
Got it. So let's start from the initial, right? Like you need a service that can, you know, ingest data first of all, right? And we built an ingestion system in Hoodie from like, you know, three years ago. So this is similar to an autoloader kind of a snow pipe or, you know, what I don't know exactly the word it's called, like the product it's called. So I think there's an ingestion system that can like load data that we dump to cloud storage or different sources. That's one, right? And there is reasons for it to be like sort of be aware of the sync because you can do checkpoint management and many other things very, very easily if the system actually understands that it's Hoodie it's writing to. Number two, when you update data on underneath, what happens is we version files. You create garbage, right? There is, you're writing new versions of files and you the old version of files somebody needs to clean up. This is what we call cleaning in Hoodie and what, you know, it's called like vacuuming, I think, in Delta Lake. And you need a service that can actually know, you can't tell it, hey, I want to read in X versions or something. And then it can automatically do this for you, right? That is one. The third thing, as you know, failures happen when you're writing to a table and you have like some leftover files, uncommitted data lying around. You need systems that can, like, you know, services that can clean the data so that, you know, these like dead files don't litter up your tables and things like that. Number four, this is slightly specific to Hoodie, but Hoodie supports a merge and read storage type where we can actually land data very quickly into a row-based format. Or, you know, flexibly in a column-based format, and then later sort of like compact it, right? And when we say compaction, when what we mean is what compaction means in databases, like, you know, Cassandra, HBase, or it's like compacting Delta files into a base file. So you need a service that can do that. And Hoodie's compaction service can, for example, like keep compacting even while the riders are going on, right? As you can imagine, like at Uber or like TikTok, like where there's like stream of high volume data coming in, it's impossible to stop and do OCC, optimistic concurrency control and all for these things. So you need like service like this. Again, I'm making the case that this has to be deeply be aware of this. Services need to be aware of each other. And that is how databases are written, yep. Right? The other one is clustering service. Like we implemented Z-ordering, Hilbert curves, and like just like linear sort order clustering. So fundamentally, what a table format metadata layer can do is remove bottlenecks in planning, right? It can store file of things and statistics, which is used to plan. But end of the day, if you look at, you know, most warehouses, if for like, you know, high performance sensitive reports and stuff, people actually, you know, tweak performance by clustering and playing with Invertica, I think it's called projections, and they wear different names and different things. But you tweak the actual storage layout to squeeze performance, right? And then you need some service which can actually, you know, understand the right patterns that are happening in the table, schedule these clustering, execute them. If they fail, they retry, right? So what Hoodie actually, the bulk of the value that we add, we believe, is, you know, in this layer where we, you know, you write to a Hoodie table, all of these services will be scheduled, executed automatically. They can fail, they'll be retried. You know, otherwise, if you take like a very thin table format as an alternative, then you need to write all these jobs yourself. And what I've seen from my LinkedIn days and the last 10 years living through the Hadoop wards and Cloud Era, Hadoop wards, all of this thing is this, everybody focuses on the format. Like, you know, as if like you solve the format and then everything's done. But open alone doesn't cut it, right? That is the painful lesson that we should learn from the rise of cloud warehouses. We should focus on these standardized services, and they take years to get like standardized and kind of like, you know, hardened in production scale like this. I think this is the main thing that we are not right now, even around lakehouse marketing by any vendor, I don't see enough emphasis laid on some of this. I've recently started noticing that, you know, recent CEO had some content around this recently. I think Starburst had some recently, but it's a very recent thing that has happened in the last few months. And this is what we've been at for last 3 years.
Okay, so just to make sure that like I also like understood correctly, right? We start like our foundation is a data lake where we store their Parquet or ORC files. Let's say Parquet, like that's the standard.
Sure.
And on top of that, then we need like a number of services. I counted 5.
Yeah.
I hope I didn't miss anything.
Probably a couple.
Yeah, but let's say the at least like the most fundamental ones, right? So sure. We need like an initiation process there. We need some service that's going like to prepare the data and like make them like available. We have vacuuming or let's say cleaning and taking care of like all the version files and like all the stuff that are happening like on a low level to make sure that we implement concurrency. We have some kind of garbage collection. Let's say I'm using garbage collection more like a broader term. Compaction, from what I understood, is like more of a specific use case for Hoodie because you have the columnar and the row based like representation. So you at some point take these two and you merge them into one or something. Is this correct?
Yeah, it's correct. I think it's slightly different. See, most of the other two projects are written more as a file statistics tracking system, right? This is where compaction is not new at all to, let's say, RocksDB or LSM stores or anything in that, like the database world. And as you know, like I come with that background. So, So compaction is more about controlling. I want to write smaller amount and then queue up a lot of these updates, later merge them instead of merging them right away.
Okay.
I think that is the key technical rationale for compaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Is this like something similar to like what happens when like tombstones are like, for example, used and then you go and like remove the tombstones from there so you can actually like
roughly
make deletions or not?
Roughly, like if you read a block structured merge freeze, LSM trees, for example, they will talk about this, a whole bunch of science around how to balance write cost and read cost and merge cost. And it's a very, very, you know, widely adopted database technique, right? From Google's Bigtable to Cassandra to HBase to RocksDB to LevelDB. That's all they use there.
Awesome. And then the fifth one has to do with what you call like clustering, which is more about like how you can optimize like on a lower level, the data, how it is stored, so you can actually do improve performance, right? Is this correct? Does this have to do with encoding or like give us like a little bit more of like information?
Yeah. So I think clustering changes how you sort, how you actually pack records into files. Just such that if you know something about the query, let's say, for example, you're a SaaS organization and you have thousands of customers and then you're collecting logs from them. So, and then you know that your query patterns mostly are, you know, you'll query for one customer at a time. Then instead of spreading this data across all the parquet files in your table or a partition, what you can do is you can cluster them so that the records similar to one customer is in like a fewest number of files, which means when you query them, you read the smallest amount of data, right? This will give you 10-12x, like, you know, like orders of magnitude of query performance. Even while I feel compared to, let's say, file listing is a real problem only for very large tables, right? So related to all that, this fundamentally affects your compute dollars. And it can dramatically reduce cost for your lake.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's amazing. My question is, and going back like to the initial question, these are like, let's say the minimum set of like additional services that the data lake needs in order to rival a data warehouse. But there's like a big difference that I see here. And the difference is that with a data warehouse, I don't really care about all that stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't have to know about like all these very technical and interesting like details,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
While in the lakehouse, like, okay, we have to talk about that stuff. So
yeah,
how do we change that? Because not everyone wants to become like a database engineer, right? In order like to query and store their data.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we opened that door when we wanted updates on the data lake, right? Mm-hmm. Because before that, if like the appending some files to a folder and then collecting statistics on it, I think it's a very simple thing to do. It's like, you know, conceptually it's very easy for people to understand that is, and people in the data lake have grown up, you know, thinking about everything as formats, right? If you look at the, when you introduce updates, you turned it into a database problem now. And if you look at the database world, like you don't actually see, I think I made this statement even last time or in a similar thing. You don't see CockroachDB, you know, MySQL, everybody saying let's standardize on some like one format and then build something on top. It's not a thing, right? When you change into a database problem, the stuff that we talked about, those are the higher order problems, right? So to answer your question, what do we do to change this? That honestly is at the core of why we even started OneHouse to begin with. And this is what I say in a lot of places. A lot of people have asked me and they come up to us for enterprise hoodie support or something. That is not what we're trying to build here at all. We're not trying to build an enterprise hoodie company. What we've seen, and you've spoken to Kyle, our head of product, who was, you know, in a different camp before this, right? Technology-wise. The common thing that we see is it takes 6 to 9 months for data engineers to become database engineers and platform engineers, understand all these concepts and actually implement them. So what if there existed, you know, a similar managed service where you can click 4 buttons and then you have your, you know, lakehouse up and running and, you know, it's open. It's meaning like it's intro. I think open is super overloaded with marketing these days. Let's truly what we care about is interoperable and extensible, right? So if you have an engineering team, you can go to the project, you know, you can contribute to the project, get a seat on the table, on the PMC. Yeah, that exists. And then it's interoperable. It works with every open standard. There is no vendor bias or anything, the project, right? So we need a foundational technology like that on top of which we build this managed service. That's how we are thinking about it. Even I speak to a lot of Cloud Barrows users. That's like my day job right now, right? And what I see is ultimately they realize this, right? They start with a fully vertical stack because it's fully managed. And like you say, people don't even have to care about it. But well, you're signing up for a 2-year like a migration project 2 years down the line, right then when you're making that choice. I think fundamentally we need to like sort of bring some manageability to it. Open alone won't cut it. That is what I'm trying to say. Like open alone is not a key business thing, right? Customers are looking for how soon can I get my like Lakehouse up and running, right? Mm-hmm. Technology aside. And we have to focus on that. And I feel while it's open as the only kind of, you know, USP against a closed stack or, you know, to take on like warehouses is not good enough. Mm-hmm. In my mind, Cloudera had to try that and fail.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, so, all right. Having, let's say, the experience that someone has with like a cloud data warehouse, something that, okay, it's good. Like we are after that, right? Like we want to offer this over like a data lake. And that's what one house like mission is from what I understand. So do you like to spend like a little bit more time, like to explain to us how we can go from these at least 5 pretty complicated, like technical concepts and services to an experience, which with a couple of like clicks on a cloud dashboard, we can have, let's say, a Lakehouse up and running and we can start like interacting with it. So how does it work? Like what's your vision for one house, like from a product perspective?
Yeah. So honestly, like even detaching myself from right, if you have to look around now and see what will I pick today to build a product experience around, I'd still go and pick Hoodie because Hoodie already has most of these services, but they are, you know, it's a library. Hoodie is a library. You need to adopt it, tweak it. So what we've learned from some of our initial kind of like, you know, users that we're working with and everybody is that just by hiding a lot of configuration, just like, you know, we expose a lot of configuration. Like speaking for Hoodie, we expose a lot of configuration, just like any database. You go to Oracle, you go to MySQL, like the point is to expose a lot of configurations. Administrators will pick it up over time and know what to do, right? I think we have to simplify that. And for example, don't even show file sizes. Why do you care about what the file size should be, right? Right now, we ask people to go hand tune that, right? Hand tune the parallels on all of this. So in our experience, it's a whole bunch of sort of like auto-tuning and intelligent configuration management and sort of like, you know, that I think is the first ingredient to get there. And the second thing where specifically talking about one house where we back ourselves more is our team actually has operational experience, not just, you know, build it, right? Like I've been on call for a 250 petabyte data lake and I had to like wake up in the middle of the night and recover a table or like do this kind of thing. So that's the second part, which is usually in data lake so far, we've not, you know, the user manage the tables, right? And if you look at Snowflake or BigQuery, if a table is corrupted, user has no like control whatsoever. Like you, like some Snowflake engineer, then, you know, what a warehouse, Redshift warehouse, you just have to figure out what's going on. So that's the second part, like building enough manageability, operability into this product where, you know, you're taking control away from the user in the name of simplicity and getting started quickly. But we need to now build all the operational kind of chops to be able to pull this part off. I think this is the hardest part. I think Jay Krebs, Confluent CEO, like has a thing where he says, you know, in ranking, programming is easy. What's much harder is debugging that thing. What's much, much more harder is operating that piece of code, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is where my disappointment with all of the marketing that happens in the data lake land is that we focus very little on these operational aspects. It's all super DIY. And then later we also complain that, oh, like, you know, it's not standardized and blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
We have to build these static services, in an operationalize it, but people, right? That's what the viruses have done really well. I actually admire them for what they've done in the last 10 years. They've actually accomplished a lot.
Absolutely. Cool. So we start with like auto-tuning and management of configuration in general, like simplifying, let's say, the whole like setup process for user there, and also introducing, let's say, like abstracting the operations, right? Like giving, let's say, like a cloud experience, right? Like there is a team that will stay awake, like to take care of things when they go wrong, like instead of having to build your own team, like to do that. And especially like for so complicated technologies like this, where it's not that easy, like to know exactly what might go wrong. So I think it makes like total sense. And my next question is, I can understand, like, I think one of the benefits that, let's say, the cloud warehouse and all the vertical solutions in general that they have is that when something is vertical and you have like complete knowledge and control over all the components, right? You can control the experience exactly as you want, right? Like, you know exactly like how it's going to be experienced by the user. At the same time, you have like much more control over what kind of optimizations to do, right? And we see that like with things like BigQuery and like Snowflake. So when it comes, and there are like actually two questions. One has to do with like the experience, but let's keep it like for next. And let's start like with performance, right? So these systems, like when you're like vertically integrate all the components, you can go there and be like, okay, I'm going to build something like Photon and have like on top of that, like these changes that need to happen like on the different components and make sure that like I squeeze out every piece, like every little of like performance out there. Where do we stand with the lakehouse architecture when it comes like to performance compared to the solutions like Snowflake or even like, like BigQuery?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I, first, I feel like things like Photon could be built on top of like, end of the day, going back to my previous statement, on the read side, right? Even with the lakehouse, these transactional like formats, on the read side, all that happens is you are, you know, getting some statistics and, you know, planning some query. From there on, you know, your query performance is dictated by things like that. I feel like, I think already we've proven that this can be built independent of the like, you know, in a very decoupled way.
Yeah.
And then if you now take things like all the table services and all these things that we talked about, they're pretty decoupled from how the queries process that, right? I mean, you cluster it and then they'll read it. That's it. Like, so in that sense, I don't see a technical limitation to optimizing the stack sort of like vertically, like how we do it, right? But I do see that, you know, there are different companies here. There is no single company, right? Like even for us, we routinely work with different query engines. There are different projects, you know, each, you know, we take like months to like land certain things. And like, you know, it can be like a lot of different friction points in terms of how quickly we can move forward. But I think the performance itself comes from the engine. Like a lot from the engine, I say, at least for interactive query performance, a lot of it comes from the engine. The with a better integration with things like, you know, Hoodie, open source Hoodie, even like one of services, we can probably like, you know, match the experience where you go and maybe configure clustering in one house while you go query on like, you know, PrestoTrino or something, right? Like that kind of experience you can, product experience you can build, but I think there are significant cross organizational boundaries and working across companies. I think it's going to slow us down there, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, just like to reiterate on what you said, like, okay, there's no, let's say, intrinsic technical reason to have like data lake slower than like a data warehouse. But when you build like the product and how like the user experiences the product, like things get a little bit more complicated. And like, just to give you an example, let's say I have like a setup with Hoodie and Trino or Presto, like I'm running my queries and I see like a performance regression at some point happening somewhere, right?
Yeah.
What do I do? Who do I reach out like to debug this thing, like figure it out? Should I come to you on no one house or should I go like to the Trino community and ask there? Or is it my data engineer like doing something stupid out there? Like things, while when I do that, like with Snowflake or, okay, Google is notoriously known for its support. So forget Google. Let's keep on on Snowflake, but at least at Snowflake, I'll open a ticket and I'll be like, guys, like something goes wrong here, like figure it out, right? And that's like my, the other like part of the question, which comes like to the user experience. So how we can also like as vendors that we believe in this unbundled, let's say, DB system of the lake house, how we can deliver at the end the same experience to the user, or at least like a similar experience to the user?
Yeah, I think that right now there's a lot of fracture. And like, first of all, there is no standard, like, you know, like APIs, right? Even I think we attempted this with even Presto, which is even the Hive connector, right? We tried to introduce abstractions so that, you know, okay, you just like change the way you are getting file listing. You are listing the thing. So we like, you know, there aren't even like good abstraction points right now and across these different engines for us to test and guard. I think as these get more standardized, right, all these three transaction formats have their own connectors now, right? At least, you know, PRs out of like things landed. I think starting with even basic stuff, investing in some basic things, having like between these companies, testing them, like, I think we have some very basic gaps to fill, I would say. Longer term, it's a pretty interesting point that you bring up. I think end of the day, there will be some level of trade-off that for the user where they are consciously choosing, I want the freedom and the flexibility. Yep. So yeah, when you go for that, then you have to pick and choose, right? It's like buying Android versus iPhone. Like, mm-hmm. Sure, like, you know the OS, you know the experience that you're getting, but it's going to vary differently based on the underlying hardware and the manufacturer and like, yep, blah, blah, blah. So you kind of have to go through that. I feel like even with that, you know, once we iron out the basics, I think it'll get to a manageable level. I don't think it'll always be a problem, I think. It won't be completely eliminated, but I think that's where I feel the lake, you know, the lake storage players and the query engine players have to like work much more closely together, yeah, than what's going on today.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I agree with what, I mean, obviously there's a lot of like space for improvement out there. Okay, like all the vendors right now, especially when it comes like to like vendors like One House, because okay, like you just start the business, right? Yeah. Like it's, yeah, still like, it's one thing to have like a open source project, and it's a completely different thing like to build like a cloud product on top of that, right? Like it's, correct, there's a lot to be discovered there. And I would also add, and that's like something that like I really admire, like to people like you, that okay, you are also starting something that it's like completely new, right? Like in terms of as a product, yeah, category, right? That's so really cool. There's a lot of learning from both sides, both from the customer side and also like from the vendor side. And this takes time. It's very risky, but potentially also like super rewarding. But there's always going to be, I think, like a trade-off at the end. It's not like, okay, we're going to have, let's say, the Microsoft Access experience with like a lake house architecture, right? Like there's going to be like some kind of trade-off there. Okay, so let me ask like a question that is like also like a little bit of like a personal like question that I have. So let's say right now I want like to start building a lake house, right? One of the things, it's one of the first, like, actually the first service that you mentioned, like the ingestion service, right? Like somehow, yeah, you have like to push data into there. How do I do it together today with Houdi? Like the only way that I can do that is like through this ingestion loader that you have built. There are other ways. Like how does this work?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple, actually. You go to docs, and if you go to, you know, how to streaming injection, it's a single command. It has like an umpteen set of parameters. You say what your source is, what your target is, configure a whole bunch, and that single spark submit command actually can ingest from Kafka, it can ingest from JDBC sources, it can ingest from S3 kind of like event streams, and then it can also do things like it can configure clustering, cleaning, compaction, all of the stuff that I talked about, right? It's almost like running a database on itself. So if you just run that one command, it will internally, you know, it spins up a Spark job. Mm-hmm. And then within that, it will self-manage all the resourcing that we need for ingestion. If you're not ingesting, it's going to do clustering. If it's not clustering, it's going to do compaction. It even has resource management. So we made it like super, super easy. And the fact that, so we actually have built a very similar thing at Uber. And I actually started writing this tool as a, you know, like a replacement for it in open source. Yeah. But I think it's gotten so popular that it's used in many, many companies in production. Right. A lot of those companies, this is their main thing. This is like their main ingest service. So yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Like as a project, we've tried to make it very easy for the users because we, you know, suffered through all this integration pains when we had to build our own data lake in Uber. But in spite of that, I feel still the operational overhead is too high. And I don't know, like that's what OneHouse is trying to solve. But yeah, Hudi already makes all this very easy for you.
Okay, so how this would work like with OpenHouse? Like what's the difference there?
OpenHouse. OpenHouse. Yeah. OpenSSD. I have so much detail. Okay. Yeah. I mean, so the thing is, we're not forking Hudi. We don't have a Hudi fork. We are. So if you look at how, and even let's take like reliable SQS ingestion or S3 ingestion or something like that. Usually we'll have a blog which describes an end-to-end architecture, right? Mm-hmm. We are platformizing the end-to-end architecture on top of Hudi. It's almost like we're automating the blog that we wrote. You can still run Hudi if you want. Like that's actually something that people like, which is they can, like a lot of our early users that like pilots that you're working with, that they are happy that they can start with something managed so they don't have like a long lead time for the layouts. But if for whatever reason they don't like us, right? And like they can just turn around and, you know, all these services are in open source. They can just buy support from AWS and, you know, that's it, right? They can move off of OneHouse as well. Most open source GTMs are built, you know, go-to-market strategies are, okay, it is an open source project. It is the enterprise kernel on top of it. Yeah. I think we're trying something new where we have an open source project. We're trying to actually hide it as much as possible within our product because we want to up-level the experience. Mm-hmm. Then if you get really familiar for whatever reason, we're not adding enough value to feel. You should be able to move off. The data is yours, right? I think this is the fundamental problem. Now you contrast it with the warehouse move. This is the fundamental problem. Once you're stuck in the warehouse, you have to migrate the data, right? If you're unhappy with it, there is nothing you can do about it. Yeah. So that is actually what we want to change. And like you're saying, it's as a product and as a kind of like also as an architecture and a category, it's something pretty like new and experimental. Architecture technology-wise, sure, it's pretty proven out, right? Your earlier question around this unbundled stack, see, whether we like it or not, whether OneHouse exists or not, that's how people were using the lake even before me, right? You are using Parquet and using Presto or Spark or Hive. That's literally how we started at Uber as well. So this multiple engine on an open format kind of thing already existed before. I think all we're trying to do is build a path for users to get started on sooner. And hopefully as a company, as a product, we add enough value that, you know, we can retain our users.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to make it a little bit harder for you. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sure you like challenges. So let's say I'm a data engineer who is coming like from the modern data stack environment where I'm used to use, let's say, Snowflake, and the tool like Airbyte or Fivetran, right? Where I know that I'm going to connect like a source, the data are going like to be loaded on S3, then like a copy command is going to be executed on Snowflake, the data will get imported into the Snowflake table format, and then I'm able like to query that. And all these things happen like inside transactions, so nothing is going to get corrupted, right?
Sure.
Cool. And now my boss says, go build a data lake. And okay, like we need like to expose it to the rest of the organization. So it should be like, feel like the same, let's say as Snowflake. Yeah. Okay. And I come to OneHouse, right? How like, think of me with like, I have this experience in my mind, right? Like that's like the journey that I think when it comes like to loading data and like this whole ELT thing. Is this something that like I can do in a lake house in general, first of all? And second of all, like, something that even if we cannot do today, let's say, like I will be able to do that like in the future with One House, is like how you think of things and like how the experience should be.
Yeah, I think so we first of all, we think the experience should be similar to what you're used to in an existing managed service, right? But how we accomplish that in One House can be through, you know, like us having more upstream partnerships, right? Like, for example, my previous employer at Confluent, I think a lot of scenarios, right, when people are at the point of thinking about data lakes and everything, they're also thinking about, okay, I want to open up event streams to my company, right? I want to open up for stream processing. So most of the things they would like, you know, they would naturally do something to get extract all this data into a, you know, like a big event bus, like Kafka or Pulsar or Kinesis or one of these things, right? And the minute you get it into that, then it's pretty simple. Like, so you can use you know, ideally One House can like provide the same experience, whether we run it or whether we partner. But I'm saying like, we want to, like we right now, we would recommend for people to rethink how they're doing data streams, right? Like, okay, the CDC that you're capturing from FiveTran, can you tee that into Elasticsearch? No, you can't, right? You can only send it to one point, which is Snowflake, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the, forget who did data lakes and everything. That's not the you know, that's not what people ultimately build as the data architecture, right? And I'm sure you're familiar with like data meshes, and we live in a world where there are like, there's enough data that there is like so many specialized stores. So I think that will make this move much easier for us, I feel, for something like One House, the move towards streaming data. And as technology, UD is like very well positioned to be the absorb all the streaming data and integrate it very well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, One House just has to focus on that problem.
In my mind. Yeah, what I keep like from what you say is that, yeah, like things when it comes, let's say, to the lake house story will get like, let's say, closer to what people are used to use from like cloud warehouses. But there's also like education that needs to happen, like people to understand that there are also like different ways that we can do things. And there's value in that, right? Like there is like it's not like you lose just like how easy it is. Like it is something you also gain, let's say, flexibility and opportunities like to optimize your infrastructure and do more things with your data at the end, right?
So I also feel like when users, like the data engineer that you talked about, is usually at a point where they're building a data lake for the company, they actually have a business problem to solve already. I think they'll mostly look at it from that lens. For example, it can be stream processing. Data democratization is what kind of like what I just talked about. It could be just that, hey, I'm building a new data engineering team or a data science team, and there is all this like event logs and data that I can't even ingest into the warehouse anymore. It's not like it's replicating the same data that exists in a warehouse outside, right? I believe a lot more data sits out there on some S3 buckets and cloud storage buckets unmanaged completely today, right? So I think there's vast amount of data that is not even getting into warehouses. And now if you now think about it, right, from this lens, I don't think the existing managed pipe like solutions are operating at that scale, right? They're not operating at even scale. Like at Uber, we do like, you know, tens of billions of trips a day. If we did that, then we are ingesting hundreds or, you know, like a billion events per day. Like there's a scale difference in the amount of events and data volume. Mm-hmm. These are things that we've done, right, routinely in open source, and we ourselves have actual, you know, hands-on experience building.
Yeah.
So I feel technically, scale-wise, it's a very different problem. And when people consider a lake, they have one of those cost scale problems already.
Yeah.
And that will motivate the experience that we build. But by and large, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And it's like, it's a very fair point also, because like I'm giving an example, let's say, but like the example and like the behavior that, let's say, someone has with a product, it cannot be taken out of context, right? Like there's also like the problems that someone's trying to solve. And you're absolutely right. Like when you reach the point where you need a data lake, there are reasons for that. It's not just because like you don't like Snowflake, right? Last question, and then I give it like to Eric, because I completely monopolized the conversation. Although he's going to be very kind and be like, it was so enjoyed, and like blah, 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 all that stuff. So we have seen lately, both from Google with the Big Lake initiative that they announced at some point, but also with Snowflake with the support, both as external tapes with Iceberg, but also like in as native formats. We see like the data warehouses are also making, let's say, a move towards like more openness and like embracing, let's say, the lake house or data lake paradigm. How do you think that this is going to affect One House as a vendor, like in this space? And how do you think this is going to evolve as part of like the data warehouse experience that we have seen so far in the cloud?
Yeah, so I think let's take the Snowflake's expansion and stuff, right? See, the key question I would ask is, how do external tables actually perform? Right, it's one thing to have an integration, but it's another thing, do they perform as well as native tables, right? Because internally, you might have read the big metadata paper. There's like a lot of metadata optimizations. Problems that the transactional formats solve have been solved in a very different way in warehouses. So yeah. I think that there is going to be like, my feeling is this is a nice thing where you can actually access data, but by and large, people are going to move, if they want something performance critical, they're going to move that into a native table and say this warehouse. I think that's what I think. I think it's very early. Right now, it feels like everybody wants to do something against Databricks. And everybody wants like, I have a lake house, they want like whatever they want to use. That's how it feels like to me. So we'll see, like, of course, you know, it can also evolve over time. End of the day, warehouses still are used for traditional, you know, analytics use cases, right? There's like much more beyond that can be unlocked in the kind of model that we've been discussing so far. So it'll be interesting to see how broad they want to be. Like warehouses want to make this, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not like saying that won't happen, but historically, like, you know, if you project it out, it may or may not happen, right?
Yeah.
The second thing here is overall, let's look at this architecture now, right? Let's say, okay, so we have a common format and then all the engines read and write from that, like the same table. It's written from like Snowflake and BigQuery and like, you know, I haven't seen a use case like that, you know, like why would you do external table? You do external tables only because you want to do some Spark processing on the same data that you want to also query, right? Then is Spark's performance good enough? What do you pick Spark? I just don't see, you know, clarity in these individual use cases to a level, for BI, only always use X. I don't see that kind of thing, right? Yeah. I see way more users, you know, caring about, I want to actually keep my data more future proof, because, you know, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, nobody talked about Snowflake as the de facto kind of like, you know, warehouse that you dump everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be breakthrough. So maybe in the next 3 years is something else. So I just want to keep my data future-proof. This data will, you know, outlive the vendors and query engines, right? I see far more companies worried about thinking from that perspective than this, you know, I want to have this thin layer where I can read, write from many engines.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it's still early. And I think it's going to be a couple of, like, interesting, at least, like, years ahead of us at the end. All these like innovation and like product developments are hopefully going like to be beneficial for the customer, right? And I think it's also like from my point of view, and like also like putting, let's say, my entrepreneurial hat, let's say, being like a new vendor in this space and seeing like these much bigger and like well established vendors like to be investing towards like something that I'm also doing. It's good.
Yeah.
It means that like there is market, there is appetite in the market for that kind of stuff. Now, who's going to win? I usually say that it's the smaller vendors that win in that kind of innovation.
Yeah.
But we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
To that point, actually, quickly, right? Like, see, if you think about it, right? All of the, so who writes code in these systems? I think, like, if you go back to who's, you know, pushing the also the transactional formats forward, I think that matters more, right? Because those people are the ones that are closer to the problems, closer to the technology. And that's kind of why I think reflects in the smaller vendors winning, because they're much, much closer. That's the only thing that they focus on.
Yeah.
Right. And overall, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's absolutely fantastic that, you know, warehouses are now taking external tables super seriously, right? I think Redshift deserves a lot of credit for this. I'm not seeing anybody give them. Spectrum added Hoodie, like, you know, 2 years ago. And, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for that. So
I agree with you. It's a little bit of a shame because, like, okay, like, there is some kind of perception that, like, Redshift is some kind of, like, let's say dead, let's say, in a way, although Redshift was the first cloud data warehouse out there, and they, like, the guys there, they keep building amazing technology, so people should keep paying attention to them. Like, they are doing, like, a great job.
And I think, this is like marketing, right? Like, this is when marketing is reality. I think as a founder now, I also have the job of empowering my team that, hey, what's marketing and what's, like, this is like a pretty blurry line. But yeah, I mean, there is, you know, Redshift, I think, makes maybe a little bit more, I don't know, but I think in the same ballpark as some of the more successful that we talk about, right? And then they have, like, tens of thousands of customers. Yeah, this is where I think, you know, for us, we've been, like, you know, not, so I would say we under yearly who are disadvantaged, because when, you know, like, EMR and, you know, like, you know, like, has, like, a lot of the AWS services are deeply integrated with Hoodie, and we didn't start one house back then because we couldn't. We're starting when marketing, it's, we are not under the marketing, you know, shine, the spotlight now. But I think I've seen enough systems come and go that I know that, you know, end of the day, the technology has to work and somebody has to operate this system and solve these customer problems. So we're like super, you know, I think we're pretty hopeful for both the open data lake houses and one house.
Awesome, awesome. So, Eric, as you can see, you are the king. Like, without you deciding that now we have to take Lakehouse seriously, nothing happens out there. So, you as the marketeer of this group of
people,
like, we want to hear from you.
No, I was laughing about you saying, you know, the line between marketing and sort of, you know, the product reality can be blurry. You know, and that is certainly true. One last question for you, and I'm thinking about just the practical, thinking about someone who's maybe thinking through the Lakehouse on a practical level, right? So you talked about the genesis of Hoodie. You had real-time needs at an immense scale. And then also a lot of the, you mentioned sort of, you know, you have the bottom half of the warehouse and you can run Spark on it or like Presto, et cetera. A lot of that tooling, I think, to a lot of our listeners, probably at least hints at scale problems, right? Like, a lot of those technologies were developed because of scale problems. One interesting thing that when we talked with Kyle from your team was that he said his opinion's been changing on the Lakehouse as sort of practical for companies that aren't at, you know, sort of whatever Uber, you know, esque scale. I just love your thoughts on that. I mean, maybe I could just frame it and sort of a slightly unfair, frame it in the form of a slightly unfair question, but do you think that the Lakehouse is at a point where a very forward thinking data team could say, we're just going to skip the data warehouse and we're going to go straight for the Lakehouse and we're just going to use that and it will sort of be able to scale with us? Or do you still see a lot of companies hitting some of the limitations of, you know, sort of your traditional, like, data lake for object storage and then data warehouse for, you know, all the transactional sort of like day-to-day practical stuff?
Yeah. It's a great question, actually. So I think it's a totally fair question. I think we are probably like a year or so from that. And I cite mostly all the DIY stuff that you need to do. Like, for example, somebody has to understand a Debezium, Postgres, you know, Kafka, like just to build a simple Postgres to lake ingestion thing, right? Like, so there's like a significant investment. And I've spoken to smaller companies who basically know that the warehouse is going to get expensive and scale over time, but today it costs way less than 3 data items, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that is the problem that most people start. And that's where we are starting, right? Mm-hmm. With that as a in a product and from that lens. The technology, if you look at it, I think cost performance wise, I think grand scheme of things, I think it'll even out of the lake will be like, lake is much, much cheaper for running any large data processes. Like about the way I look at the world today is warehouses are, I think, in my opinion, still best in class when it comes to maybe like interactive query performance, you know, the work that's going into things like Presto, Trino are changing all that, right? And then when you look at data processing ETLs, that is where it gets like really expensive. Now the flip side of scale is cost, right? If you're running at large scale, means also large cost. So even moderate scale stuff, that's probably what Kyle like hinted at. Even simple stuff, right? We can, instead of spending $100,000, you can probably spend $30,000 on a lake, as long as the similar kind of experience existed. I think that is opening up, and this is not possible without the cloud. I think cloud is what is the proliferation of all these different awesome engines. And that's actually what's acting as a good kind of like catalyst for deriving that. So I don't see this as just a scale problem. And although an interesting note, when we started Hoodie at Uber, I mean, for a year and a half or so, it was like, that's why you don't see, like, we don't have a launch or anything. Right? It was like an interesting nerdy project that engineers at Uber built. Because not a lot of people had that kind of scale with updates and this kind of thing then. But right now, just with the with time and then the data volume exploding, what we see routinely is, I'm surprised that like much smaller companies, the scale that they have, like, oh, wow. Okay. You have a 2 terabyte partition. Okay. I did not see that. Like, you know, that's, so there is also that. My view has been as well evolving for a while. I myself, to be honest, thought like that, which is like, oh, it's like a high scale problem, you know? But then the community, when I saw the scale that they were like doing things at, that changed me. Like I just literally met a airline data tracking system company. They think in just some tens of terabytes every day, we wouldn't have even heard about that. Like they track all the flight data across all the airlines, the US. And then they're able to get something up and running, and they have that. They can't send this data into a warehouse. So they have a lake-based solution. So there is also that organic data volume growth that is pushing people more towards this.
Yeah, super interesting. I can absolutely see that. Let's say in a year's time, right, you have, you know, say people who have been working at a larger scale company, maybe they adopt some sort of lakehouse, you know, flavored technology. Then they go to work for a smaller company and they're like, hey, we can do this actually. Instead of waiting until the bill gets to $100,000 and then having to do, you know, sort of a complete like replatforming. Super interesting.
Yeah, it's going to change a lot in the next 3-4 years. And it's going to, I think we have to get to a point where it's feasible, right? You can like no cost, no trade-offs to your timelines. You can get started with this thing.
Yep. Yeah, it makes total sense. Awesome. Well, I think we went long, but that's because Brooks let me record this time so we get to break the rules, which is always great. Vinod, this has been such a great conversation. We learned a ton as always, and we'll need to have you back for sort of a third time's a charm round on the data section.
Yeah, absolutely love to. And thanks for all the awesome questions. That's one of the things that I really enjoy is that the quality of the questions, and you know, it gets really push me on the hard stuff. So yeah, this is fun. That we should definitely do it.
Well, that's a very high compliment. So thank you so much. And we'll talk soon. I love talking with that guy, Costas. He he just has this really incredible ability to like answer questions with a high level of detail, but keep the explanation really concise, which is a really challenging skill that I have a lot to learn from. I think probably one of the takeaways for me was the conversation right at the end where he talked about how the market is changing and when he thinks that data lakehouse technology will come down market and potentially even be adopted instead of a warehouse, sort of as the first major like operational data store in a company, which is really interesting to think about. But at the same time, his point was, well, 4 years ago, like no one thought about Snowflake as like, okay, you need a warehouse, you just stand up Snowflake, right? And so he said, in another 3 years, who knows what could happen? So that was just really interesting. And I know I'll be thinking about that a lot this week. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with you. That was like a very interesting point. And it's also like something that remains to be seen in how exactly it's going to happen and what will happen. What I keep is, there are like many different points that I will keep, but one of the things that I really enjoyed was the conversation that we had about how a lake house as an experience and does like performance and like a couple of different, let's say, like parameters that we put there. It's going like to match the experience that we have with data warehouses. And I like how pragmatic he was about that and saying that, okay, I mean, obviously things can improve a lot, but there are always trade-offs, right? Like you are not going to have, let's say, the exact same experience, but at the same time, you are going to have, let's say, more flexibility or like more scalability or like having different capabilities that you cannot have right now, like, and you will probably not ever have with a vertically integrated solution like a cloud data warehouse. We'll see. I mean, it's still early with all these products, but it's always great like to talk with people like him because he gives like a very accurate, let's say, prediction of the future. So.
I agree. All right. Well, many, many more great guests coming up. Subscribe if you haven't, and we will catch you on the next one. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Data Stack Show. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app to get notified about new episodes every week. We'd also love your feedback. You can email me, Eric Dodds, at eric@datastackshow.com. That's E-R-I-C at datastackshow.com. The show is brought to you by Rudderstack, the CDP for developers. Learn how to build a CDP on your data warehouse at rudderstack.com.